already did my pool.
For Commerce, right?
Okay.
Yeah, I already did my pool.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. Hello there. Good morning, everybody. We're going to, well, we do have an approval of the minutes. Yeah? No? Is that wrong? Okay. The only thing we have on the agenda today is a bill I'm carrying. It's House Bill 4103. And I thought we'd go ahead and just have at it. I'm actually going to ask Mr. Michael to join us at the front table here and actually walk through the bill for members to understand it. And then we're going to have Dr. Wilson from Revenue walk through the revenue estimate so everyone can understand what's going on in the revenue estimate. So with that, I'll just tell you members in general what I'm trying to do in this bill here, kind of a big picture pullback from what the specifics are, is, of course, we all know we have $1 billion deficit, and I feel it's the tax committee's job to start working on it. Somebody's got to cut, so it might as well be us. So, this is a first crack at the $1 billion deficit. I know a lot of people have a lot of ideas on how to get out of it, but this would actually begin the process of kind of cutting what's not necessary in government. And that this bill attempts to repeal all the corporate subsidies that exist in the Minnesota tax code. So how this bill really came to fruition, just so members know what I was thinking here, is after the November forecast was unveiled, I sat and thought about how will we get out of this $1 billion, and the tax committee's job is to raise the revenue if that's what comes out of the legislative session, and I know the governor's feeling about that. So I thought we'd start looking at what we could cut. So I thought, well, we ought to start with all the corporate subsidies that are that exist in the Minnesota tax code, and not pick folks, not say some people could keep their corporate subsidies and some couldn't, just repeal them all. And so that's what this bill is attempting to do. By doing that, by having everybody who's not paying taxes or receiving tax preferences and tax benefits start paying, we actually took in so much money in the process that we were able to lower the corporate tax rate, thereby pulling out those folks who are getting an extra tax benefit and taking the winners out of the system, leveling the playing field and reducing the corporate tax rate for all of Minnesota companies. And we were also able to repeal the corporate AMT. So that's what this bill is doing. It's a business tax reform that benefits all Minnesota companies by removing corporate subsidies that some are benefiting from. So it should certainly be controversial, but I thought you should just understand where it came from. I went and saw Mr. Michael and said, you know, one good way for me to start here is to start taking out all the corporate subsidies, because they're certainly competing up against higher education and K-12 and the environment and every other kind of core government service that the state government provides. And so this bill is an attempt to do that. I thought of a number of them on my own, but I asked Mr. Michael to read through the statutes and try to locate every corporate subsidy he could find. And so this is what the product of his work is, and some of them are very small and some of them are very big. So with that, that's kind of the big picture of what this bill is all about. And I'll go ahead and move House File 4103, and Mr. Michael, if you could walk us through the bill.
Madam Chair, do you want to do the author's amendment as well?
I think I'll wait on that and think that through a minute more.
There is an author's amendment in the members' packet that corrects some effective dates.
Then I'll go ahead and move it.
So
I'll move the A1 amendment and give it the shape I'd like. Is there discussion of the amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. And members, I should also tell you that amendment also just lowered the corporate tax rate further.
No,
not that one? Okay, I have another amendment on that. That's the one I was holding on. I'll explain that now since it's come up. Again, by repealing all these corporate subsidies, the bill raises enough revenue that the tails really bring even more money in the out years. And so Mr. Michael alerted me this morning that I'm cutting the corporate tax rate a full percent, and I could cut the corporate tax rate again in 2010 because of the money it raises, and rather than use all that money for the state budget, instead to pass it on to Minnesota companies. And that amendment is in our packet as well, which is what I thought Mr. Michael is referring to, and we may want to we may want to add that later. But just so you know, the tail, you'll see in the revenue estimate, the bill produces enough money, even with a corporate tax cut rate and repealing the AMT, that we could cut the corporate tax rate further still in the out year. So with that, Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, I guess I'll go through the bill in on a section by section basis. That's a little conceptually a little bit out of order, but I think it still probably is the best way to do this. One of the things that the bill does is to repeal the JADZ program, and that's done in the very last section of the bill in the repealer section. But section one is a grant program that's intended to sort of smooth the transition to the repeal and to mitigate the effect on the businesses that participated in that program. I think it's probably before I get into the grant program, it's useful to go through the effective dates for the repeal of the JADZ program. And there are three different effective dates for that. On the income and corporate franchise tax exemption provisions, the tax benefits are repealed effective for tax year 2009. The businesses would continue for the current year to receive the JADZ tax benefits under the income and corporate tax. The sales tax exemption is repealed effective for sales occurring after September 30, 2008, but for binding contracts that are in place before that, the exemption continues so long as the sale is completed by March 31st of 2009. The final piece of the JADZ tax incentives are the property tax incentives, and the bill repeals those effective for pay 2010, so the businesses would continue to pay for the current year and next year. Section 1 creates a JADZ grant replacement program that authorizes the Commissioner of BEAD to make grants to qualifying businesses that are in the JADZ program currently. These businesses would have a choice that they could make. They could, effective as early as July 1 of this year, they could just decide to opt out of their business subsidy agreement and go on as a normal business without applying for a grant. The other option is that they could apply for a grant to the Commissioner of Deed. And the bill appropriates $10 million to the Commissioner to make these grants for fiscal 2010. The grants would be made in two installments in July of 2009 and July of 2010. Businesses that would not qualify for grants are businesses, as I indicated before, that elected to opt out of their business subsidy agreement. So in other words, one of the conditions of getting a grant is that you continue to be bound by your business subsidy agreement to produce the jobs and so forth. So businesses that opt out would not qualify. Secondly, businesses that do not meet the but-for test would not qualify, and this would be up to the Commissioner of Deed to evaluate. And according to the legislative auditor's study, apparently there's a fair number of businesses that they concluded received JADZ but would have done it anyway, would have made the investment or located in the zone. So this would be a way to not give grants to those businesses. The final set of businesses that would not qualify for grants are businesses that have violated or are not meeting their business subsidy agreements. The bill lists the number of factors that the commissioner can take into consideration in deciding whether to give a grant to a business and in setting the amount of the grant, and those are listed on the job on the bill summary on page 2 under the bulleted items. I won't go through those. The bill sets a maximum grant amount that Deed can give to any one business, and that maximum can't exceed the least of the following three items. One is the present value of the tax benefits that were repealed as a result of the bill. The second limitation, and again, all of these, you know, whichever one of these is the smallest is the maximum. The second one is they could not give a grant that exceeds 20% of the present value of the sum of the wages that that business is going to pay to its employees in the zone. And the third limitation is they couldn't give a grant that exceeds $25,000 per new employee that the business hired. As I said, the bill appropriates $10 million to fund this grant program. It's not clear if that's enough, and the part that will depend upon the judgment of the Commissioner of Deed as to sort of the need to retain businesses or the benefits of retaining businesses by giving them grants. To provide a safety valve for that, the Commissioner is allowed to certify an amount that exceeds $10 million, excuse me, to the Commissioner of Revenue. That would then be added to the state general tax and would be spread on all commercial industrial property and would then be appropriated to the Commissioner to make grants over $10 million if the Commissioner believes that that's necessary and appropriate. Sections 2 and 3 change the state general tax. This is the tax on CI property. For property that's in the airport, both the Twin Cities International Airport and the St. Paul International Airport. This property is currently exempt from the state business property tax, and these sections would subject them to that tax, but would not adjust the rate downward because of the expanded base. So the addition of that property to the state general tax would yield additional revenue to the general fund. Section 4 of the bill expands the definition of what's a domestic corporation for purposes of the corporate franchise tax to include three categories of corporations. One is, and these basically the, let me step back and first say what the consequence of this is. Domestic corporations are required to be included on the combined report if they're a member of a unitary business. Foreign corporations are not, and foreign corporations are defined by whether or not they're incorporated in or chartered in a foreign country. What this provision does is it brings in some corporations that are incorporated in a foreign country into the unitary group, and the consequence of that is that their income and their apportionment factors would be added to the unitary group's combined report in calculating all of its members' tax liability. So what it does is it pulls in the income of these foreign corporations into the unitary group. And there are three categories. First, if they're chartered or incorporated in a tax haven, and I'll get into what's a tax haven. Secondly, if they're doing business in a tax haven, even if they're incorporated in a different foreign country, and the amount of business that they do in the tax haven would be enough to subject them to tax in that tax haven country. They're included. And third, if they have 20% of the average factors, that's their property, payroll, and sales in the United States, then they would be included in the unitary group. Section 5 is a definition of what constitutes a tax haven, and this is done in two parts. First, the section includes a list of countries that have been identified both by the Organization of Economic Opportunity and Cooperation, that's the European countries, as tax havens, and secondly have been identified by the IRS in court documents as tax havens. And so essentially they would need to be on they need to be on both of these lists to have gotten into the bill. And this also parallels closely a bill that's in Congress that's been introduced by Senator Levin and Senator Coleman. So the bill provides this list of foreign countries and then secondly authorizes the Commissioner of Revenue to add to or delete from that list based on a criteria of whether or not this is a foreign country that has no tax or a very low tax rate, and secondly, has a secrecy policies or practices that make it difficult for the IRS to get tax information, permitting them to enforce the U.S. tax laws. The third thing is it requires the commissioner to take countries off that list if they enter into a tax treaty with the United States that provides for sharing of information. There are a couple of other states. Montana is one that has adopted a tax haven law like this. I believe West Virginia also has. Section 6 and 7 are part of the repeal of the JobZ program, and there's also the what's called the International Economic Development Zone program. I think some of you probably are more familiar with this as the air freight zone. And so those are making conforming changes in the law repealing that. Section 8 modifies and then repeals the foreign royalty exclusion. For tax year 2008, it limits the foreign royalty deduction to payments that are actually for the use of property in a foreign country. And then for tax year 2009, it repeals the foreign royalty subtraction completely. Section 9 is again part of the repeal of the JobZ and the air freight zone. And it also, in connection with Section 10, requires an add-back or taxation of what are called in the bill Minnesota Development Subsidies. And these essentially are for businesses that have located in a tax increment financing district or in an abatement project and are either own or renting property in a building in which the owner or developer entered into a development agreement with the city to get a benefit from tax increment financing. So in effect, what this would do is it would subject them to corporate tax on the amount of tax or rent that's used for paying taxes that essentially go to tax increment financing or the abatement program. Let's see, sections 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16 all relate to repealing the JobZ program and the International Economic Development Zone program. Section 17 is the foreign operating FOC provision, and it just completely repeals the foreign operating corporation provisions effective for tax year 08. Somehow I skipped over the rate cut. In section 2, there was a rate cut in it, and as the chair indicated, that provision cuts the rate by 1 percentage point effective for tax year 2009. Section 18 is the repeal of the JobZ exemption from the motor vehicle sales tax. Section 19 contains all of the repealers, which this is where the main part of the bill is. And if you look through the actual bill itself, you can see there are 23 pages of statutes that are repealed by this bill. I can run through those. Section 27202, subdivision 4, 64 and 83 are the property tax exemptions for JobZ and for the International Economic Development Zone. And again, those would be repealed for property taxes payable in 2010. Section 290.01 is the definition of FOCs. The job credit for Northwest Airlines heavy maintenance base is included. That was added in the author's amendment. It's not in the original bill draft. The JobZ job credit, the job credit for the biotechnology and health science zones, which are also repealed in this, the R&D credit for the biotech zone, the bovine testing credits repealed, the R&D credit, 290.068, is repealed by this. The corporate alternative minimum tax is repealed, the corporate AMT. The special apportionment formula for mail order sales businesses only. The JobZ sales tax exemption, the bio science sales tax exemption, the air freight zone sales tax exemption, and then all of the related jobs, and air freight zone and bio science, health science industry zone provisions are repealed. And finally, there was a $250,000 appropriation for grants connected with the air freight or the International Economic Development Zone, and that's also repealed. So that's a very quick run through of the provisions.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. And we want to hear from Dr. Wilson. But are there questions for Mr. Michael first on everything he's just walked through and understanding? Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Michael, I just want to make sure I understand the what's provided here with regard to Job Z. Any Job Z agreements currently in place where a business has made a commitment to expand or locate, the community has signed off on it. What this, in effect, would do is to roll back some of the benefits that were originally agreed to. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, yes. This would take away the remaining tax benefits after the effective date. So starting in, you know, for taxes, property taxes payable in 2011 and income taxes in tax year 2009 and so forth, yes. And essentially the business would then, as I suggested before, have a choice. They could say we're going to void our business subsidy agreement, or alternatively we'll apply for a grant which will maybe partially or wholly, depending upon the amount, sort of compensate us for, you know, some of the loss of the tax benefits that we experience.
Representative Lanning.
Madam Chair, what I have a problem with is, I think it's one thing to change the rules going forward in terms of future jobs and agreements that may come forward. It's a whole other proposal, it seems to me, to change the rules in the middle of the game, where businesses have entered into a good faith arrangement that provides some benefits to them, and now we're saying they're no longer available. I have a problem with that.
Well, and thank you for that, Representative Lanning. I expect that to be the reaction of some. In fairness, I guess I'm doing that to everybody here in the cell, including all the other companies that are getting subsidies. It is changing the rules, no question, and that's because we have a $1 billion deficit. So we have to start cutting, and I felt the corporate subsidies are the way to start. I know that there are some legitimate job Zs out there, and the Office of the Legislative Auditor's report shows that there are some, and so the grant is designed to ensure that those who are legitimate can still play out and get their tax benefits, but the majority of them, that isn't the situation in the Office of the Legislative Auditor's report, and so those would be repealed immediately or as quick as I could, because as Mr. Michael stated, it takes a while, and you have to use PAO 8 or PAO 9, depending which property tax, if you're giving them a property tax benefit or the income tax or whatever it is we're repealing. But, you know, that argument, and that's accurate, Representative Lanning, I'm doing that not just to job Z's, to all kinds of corporate subsidies, and the deficit is here now, and it's $1 billion, and I'm attempting to start cutting. So that is the intention. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm open on questions or comments, and I can certainly wait for comments.
Marquardt, action staff.
Very good. All right. So, well, Madam Chair, I commend you for your approach on this. I really do, because not only are you taking a look at all the business subsidies, but you're also lowering the business franchise tax. And, you know, we started discussing closing loopholes on foreign operating corporations about 3 years ago, and you were a champion on that, and there were very few supporters of doing that. And yet today, now I think it's almost unanimous around this table that this is an area that we need to cut back on. So I do appreciate that very much. I would like to say a few comments on defense of Job Z. And as you know, I am carrying a bill working with Deed that addresses many of the concerns that we've had. In fact, a lot of the concerns that the Office of Legislative Auditor brought up, and also concerns that I've heard in this committee over the last few years. And quite frank, when this came about in 2003, I voted against it because it was in the tax bill that cut $150 million in local government aid, and I felt that hurt rural Minnesota a lot more than Job V helped, and I still believe that today. But even with all the concerns, the bottom line is this program has helped rural Minnesota. And I think the best approach, and I do see in here that you do leave some avenues open. I mean, you're talking about Job V, and you've got a grant and so forth. But I think the best approach on Job V, because it is a tool for rural cities to use, and it has been beneficial to a lot of rural communities, the best approach would be to fix it rather than scrap Job V. And I know there's a lot of discussion yet on this bill and so forth, but the Job V program, I agree. I think it needs to be doing what initially it was intended to do, impact the most distressed area, make sure it's not competing with other businesses that aren't receiving this, make sure that these companies would only be locating, because they need the benefit and not the other way around. And I do think in working with Deed that we've addressed, I think, almost all of those concerns. And I think if we go that approach and looking at making the corrections rather than scrapping it, that you're going to have a lot more effective of a program that's actually targeting in on the actual results that we want. So, Madam Chair, overall, your approach on this bill, I applaud you, because I think it's in times of budget crunches like this, we have to look at everything. Job D has been a real benefit to rural Minnesota, and I think with improvements, can meet a lot more of the objectives that it was intended to do. So, just thank you for.
Thank you. I should just point out, first of all, on the Job Z, if I may, members, Job Z is a very, very small part of this bill. This bill raises $280 million in the next biennium by repealing corporate subsidies. Job Z is $21 million of that. Very tiny part of the bill. But it's something that, I guess Job Z becomes about $50 million of that, out of that $280. In that biennium. But I do want for Greater Minnesota legislators, I do want to throw this out there before people get too worried. The majority of the corporate subsidies that I repealed take place in the metro. The overwhelming majority of the corporate subsidies that are repealed are in the metro. The FOC provision is the multinationals, that's mostly metro. And the TIF districts, where corporations are now going to have to, they get to deduct as a business expense the property taxes that they really pay to themselves. They really don't pay property taxes, and they do technically, but it just goes to themselves. That's the corporate subsidy. That's like just the corporate subsidy. They get to deduct it as a business expense. And that's being repealed. It's recognizing that that's a corporate subsidy, and 87% of the TIF district money that provision raises is in the metro. So, before rural members get concerned, the overwhelming majority of the money that we're eliminating in corporate subsidies happens in the metropolitan area. So I just wanted to make sure members knew that. And that's not clear because we have not yet gone through the revenue estimate. So if we can, I think it's best before we get into the big broad discussion to just hear Dr. Wilson quick walk us through the revenue estimate so everyone can see that, remember, we're repealing all these business subsidies, but we're also lowering the corporate tax rate and abolishing the corporate AMT, which are both, in my estimation, stellar business taxation policies that levels the playing field for corporate Minnesota. Dr. Wilson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Paul Wilson from the Research Division of the Minnesota Department of Revenue. You should have a copy of the revenue estimates, and I will go through it in the order. Again, it doesn't match the order of the sections of the bill with all the corporate items first, so it's a different order. You should note that it says at the very top, preliminary analysis, and I'll make a few comments about what's most preliminary in here, which I think will be helpful for you as well. For the corporate franchise tax, the first item mentioned is the tax haven corporation provision. Mr. Michael said, this is a provision that exists in a couple of the states, one of them being Montana. We have been in contact with Montana. The estimate here is derived from what Montana expected to raise. Now, they do have some audit information, and we're waiting on that. When we get the audit information from Montana, they'll have a better idea of what they're actually raising. So this estimate is fairly tentative at this point, but it's based upon Montana's work on that proposal. The next two lines are the repeal of foreign operating corporations and the repeal of foreign royalty subtraction. You'll notice repeal of foreign operating corporations has a larger cost in fiscal year 2009, and then it shrinks. And this is again because you get some of the first calendar year. It's really 1/3 year's worth of revenue in the first year, given the effective date. The tax year 2008 is assumed to, part of that effect is assumed to move into 2009, given the effective date. So that's the typical bunching you get with these kinds of provisions. Foreign royalty subtraction does not have that bunching, and the reason is that there is a one-year transition rule for foreign royalties, as Mr. Michael explained. That transition rule will raise less in the first year than it would going forward, and so you do see the lack of bunching there. Again, $55.8 million in the first year, and growing, basically growing with tax receipts, expected corporate tax receipts. The next line is not really explained in the revenue estimates, but there's an FOC and royalty interaction. Let me try to explain why we have an interaction here. We have an interaction because there are some companies that have both FOC provisions. They benefit from FOC provisions, and they benefit from royalty provisions, and they currently pay no tax. They, in other words, have enough deductions, enough special considerations that they are not currently paying tax. Getting rid of the FOC deduction by the FOC provision by itself, they still would pay no tax. Getting rid of the royalty provision by itself, they still would pay no tax. But if you get rid of both of them, they start paying tax. And so the only reason for the interaction between these two items basically is that if you do both, you bring a few extra people into, few extra companies into the tax system that would not pay if you did one or the other separately. So it's a positive, it's a net gain, it sort of multiplies a little bit the effect of doing the two together. The sum of the parts is, the total effect is a little larger than the sum of the parts because of that interaction. So if you only did one of these two pieces, you would lose the full interaction. So it goes along with doing the second, doesn't matter which one the second is, it's whichever one is the second of them. The next item is to repeal the mail order apportionment effective January 1st, 2009. And then, again, fairly small revenue impact. The lines below that, reduced tax rate to 8.8% and rate reduction on base expansion. The line that says reduced tax rate to 8.8% is saying if we use the current base, if we don't do anything else in this bill, we use the current base and we just lower the rate to 8.8%, this is how much revenue would be foregone, $24 million. Again, it's the allocation to fiscal years, given the effective date. It's basically $80 million per year in the out biennium. The line below that says, but wait a minute, you're lowering the rate, but you have expanded the base. You're adding money in for the FOC and royalty provisions, and now you've got to lower that because that's been measured at 9.8% rate. And so the rate reduction of the base expansion is just simply saying, well, it's just simply a way to show the total. In some ways, you can combine those two lines. If you do all the expansion first, you could say combine those two lines and say that's the impact of rate reduction, having already expanded the tax base. The next two lines have to do with repealing the AMT and the AMT credit. The alternative minimum tax is repealed earlier, on January 1st, 2009, so that there is an effect beginning in fiscal year 2010. The AMT credit is repealed, it's not repealed until January 1st, 2011. So nothing shows up on here. However, it would be a revenue gain basis. It's a credit you're repealing, so it'd be a revenue gain of about $5.7 million in years beyond the budget period that's shown here. So we left it on there despite all the zeros because there really is an impact. It just isn't showing up until fiscal year 2012. The required add-back of Minnesota development subsidies, this is the requirement that corporations must add back the property taxes they deduct for federal purposes if it's for property that's in a TIP zone or in an abatement, if they're having a property tax abatement. There are a couple other provisions in there, as Mr. Michael explained, but the effective date is January 1st, 2009, so the first effect comes in 2010. This is a fairly rough estimate based on the TIP property tax information and our assumptions about how much of that is corporate and how much would actually affect the taxable income of corporations, but $18.5 million a year in the out biennium. And finally, there are tax credit's repealed. The R&D credit is repealed starting in 2009. I might add there may be a slight interaction here with some of the other provisions. We do not have an interaction in the estimate at this point, but it would be very small, I think. But there probably is interaction with the FOC and the royalty provision. And the bovine tuberculosis testing credit is also repealed. There are a couple other, some other things that are also repealed, and if you look on the third page of the revenue estimate, in the middle of the page, it mentions that there are repealed provisions with no impact. In the middle of the page, on page three, it lists four items, and then there's one more added in the amendment that also would have no effect. Conforming to federal subpart F rules has no impact because those federal rules are expiring. They may extend them in the future, but under current law, they expire before this, in the first year that the taking it out of the code would show up. The ethanol tax credit subtraction is the same way. It's a federal provision we piggyback on that would expire. Again, may well be extended, but I think that has already expired, maybe. So it has already expired. The International Economic Development Zone tax provision has no effect just simply because the recent report suggests it's not going to happen, basically, so we're carrying no numbers for that. And the biotech and health science industry zone also has no effective tax costs as to the state at this point in time. The same thing is true of the airline credit that is jobs credit that also is revealed in these amendments. The line that says net corporate tax, a little bit of the I think bovine tax TB credit is also repealed for individual tax, so, or is it not? Yeah, I think it is. But that should be corporate. There's a little bit of individual income tax in there as well, but very little. The job fee tax incentives, the numbers there are just taken from the tax expenditure book. They include sales tax, motor vehicle sales tax, as well as income and corporate tax. They are basically just adding up those different pieces for the from the book. So, but again, most of it is actually sales tax in terms of the dollars. The property tax refund interaction is on there because if you repeal the job the property tax benefit, you will in fact reduce property taxes for some homes. You're increasing the tax on them. Reduce property tax for some homes, which has a property tax impact. That is a positive number, meaning property tax refunds would go down slightly in 2011. And appropriation for grants is put in there. I would comment there is a provision that the grants could be increased beyond the $10 billion, but that would be funded by an increase in the state property tax, so there'd be no net impact. That's noted by the asterisk at the bottom of the page. And finally, the state general levy. Normally, if we exempt somebody or don't exempt someone from the state general levy, it would not show up. It would show up as a shift of tax. It would not affect revenue. But in this case, given the way it's written, the tax rate is not adjusted, so this actually would increase state revenue. And so the bottom line is shown at the bottom of the first page.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Wilson. Okay, so questions for Dr. Wilson or Mr. Michael or discussion. We have Atkins, Dabney, Zellers, and Simpson, and we want to take public testimony. Representative Atkins.
Madam Chair, I had a basic question earlier for Mr. Michael, and with some work, I managed to find the answer myself. So I don't have a question any longer. Thank you.
Representative Dabney. Representative Dabney stepped out. Representative Zellers.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and for Dr. Wilson, just first and foremost, the chair mentioned this is going to be mostly suburban. The weight of this is going to come out of the suburban area. Can you give us, not necessarily, if you want name specific, but if industry specific, some of the folks that are going to be affected by this? Again, if you prefer not to say corporate names, that's fine, but just an industry specific. I think once it sounds good to repeal the evil corporation subsidies, but when we start talking about the job providers or the job industries, I think that folks should know who are going to be, quote unquote, taking their money from.
Madam Chair, Representative Zellers, obviously I cannot name names in this case. The revenue estimate does mention how many companies are affected, so the number of companies affected by the foreign operating corporation is actually pretty small. It's 1,200 companies. That's not the entire group, but companies, about 2,200 affected by foreign royalty subtraction repeal, and 200 by the R&D credit. Clearly, the R&D credits, you probably have a pretty good feel for the companies that do R&D in the state. I'm not sure how much. I think it's fairly clear that a lot of these are large companies, some of the larger companies in Minnesota. But it's very difficult for us to describe it without making things clear. I would say that the Foreign Operating Corporation and the Foreign Relations Protection and the R&D credit are all, as you can see, highly concentrated. When I say 1,200 get benefit from the FOC, most of that comes from 50 companies. So this is very highly concentrated among a few companies, a fairly small number of companies, rather. And the effect of these repeals, you're reducing the rate. A lot of people will benefit from the rate reduction, and don't have these provisions. So you certainly are shifting, as you hint. You're shifting the distribution of the tax somewhat. The rate reduction doesn't sort of. We're not sort of just evening everything out because some will be affected much more than others by the repeal.
And Representative Zellers, just to be clear, not suburban, metro.
Yeah.
And I guess what I would say in the FOC provision is these are the large multinationals. I mean, people can figure out who that is. And those are mostly metro. They are definitely located also in Minneapolis and St. Paul, not just in the suburbs. But I guess the way to think about it in my mind is, you know, remember the governor's agreed to do FOC, so that's going to, we heard his proposal on Monday and it was in there. So I think that's the part that I think most people know is probably going to happen. So I go a little beyond that with the royalties, and then I take in all the other corporate subsidies that are out there too. But the key here is remembering that it is taking away tax preferences and tax benefits to some companies and taking a lot of that change and giving it to all companies in a rate cut. So how that would all play out through the system is hard to know. I think we can think of companies, if we just think about it for a while, who would not like the FOC provision but would actually do better because of the corporate tax rate cut, and others who would still be worse, and I think it just depends on the individual company. And so I'm sure that those companies are going to let us know who they are, and we'll hear from them in the public testimony. So I think it's a difficult one to get your heads around as far as when you think about individual companies and where they're located, but I'm trying to look at just the policy. So and taking away individual preferences for some and spreading some of the benefit to all, and then using some of the revenue for the deficit. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I didn't say I was opposed to it. Didn't say I was wild about it either. But just to the point on the number that we're booking, Dr. Wilson, and since we have been talking about this, as the Marquardt said, we've been talking about the FOC provision and some of this for quite some time. And some of the testimony we'd heard is that some of the companies that were possibly using or taking advantage, however you want to characterize it, have ceased or have changed their practices. And I'm just curious, Dr. Wilson, is the $133 million in the first year, quite honestly, is that have we inflated that number by two, by a half? I mean, some of the numbers we've heard, and governors, I forget his number, but 50 to 80 million a year is something that we've heard, you know, kind of consistently is 133. So we're not setting up a house of cards here that's going to come down on us when we come back next year and we're $40 or $50 million short.
Madam Chair, Representative Zellers, the 133 here, remember, has a bunching in the first year, so it's probably better to think about the 105 or something in the second year as being the annual number. You have heard numbers that were more in the 80 million because the provision in last year's bill did not repeal the FOC, it simply scaled it back, it restricted it, and so it did not have as large an impact. It also had some royalty provisions in it, but didn't have quite as large an effect as repeal the FOC does by itself. These numbers are consistent, in other words, with the earlier estimates. It's just that it's a full repeal. In some ways, we're more comfortable with the full repeal estimates because we have numbers for the full repeal. Trying to figure out how much of that is very foreign income versus domestic is much more, I mean, that increases the uncertainty in the estimate. In terms of the use of these provisions, the last full year information we have is for tax returns filed in 2006, and certainly in that year there was a continued upward trend in the use of FOC, at least in the dollars involved in the FOC, the dollar tax loss had been growing consistently year, basically from 2002 to 2006. There does appear, we don't have full complete data for 2007 yet, there does appear to be some decline in 2007, so some of what you suggest may in fact be there. On the other hand, royalties have grown in the last year, royalty production is growing faster. So if you look at the two together, I don't think there's any sign of a downturn in the combined numbers here. Year-to-year numbers on the foreign operating corporations often depend upon one or two big companies, and it's really hard to interpret that. But you know, you could look at the 2007 as showing some sign of decreased use of FOCs if that, in fact, continues, but it's a little early to say for sure if that's a trend or that's just a one or two companies that reduce their use for 1 year for some reason. The other question, comment though about the uncertainty of the revenues. Corporate revenues are always uncertain. I think if you look at the adjustment to corporate revenues made in the last forecast, that was a big adjustment. And so any sort of the uncertainty in our estimates here is probably smaller than the uncertainty in the total corporate revenues themselves. So I'm not sure how you deal with the uncertainty, but certainly these numbers are uncertain for sure. But corporate revenues in general are uncertain. So anything to do with the corporate revenues is going to be plagued by that uncertainty.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Dr. Wilson. And Madam Chair, to you, if you're going to go on ox, I think you got the whole herd here, and I don't think anybody's been held harmless. But as far as starting off the negotiations, you know, it's no secret that Job Z is a pretty pet project, a pretty big pet project of the governor's. And no offense, but I think you've kicked his dog right out of the gate here. And I don't see how you get past the niceties. And I'll let Representative Simpson say where the greater Minnesota maybe think they got kicked in this deal, but I don't know how we're going to get beyond taking out a pretty big project or pretty big pet project of the governor's and get to a point where we're actually going to have a bill. But if this is for discussion purposes only, you've got got one that's going to be worth at least a couple hours here and maybe some more this afternoon. So I'm curious to see where we go with this, Madam Chair, but I think we're kind of off on a little bit of a bad foot on this one.
Well, thank you for that, Representative Ellers, and I have to just say, since this is my bill, again, very small part of the bill, and, you know, maybe the governor will feel that way. I think this committee knows it's probably the poorest tax policy in the entire bill that should be gotten rid of. And folks who sat on this committee back when it was brought into, you know, when it was authored, I think it was Representative Magnus who carried it. Lots of people around the table on both sides of the aisle opposed it. It's a bad tax policy that's not working. So I wish it weren't the governor's pet project. It is. I understand that, but it should be gotten rid of. And I think I've stretched pretty hard here in that I set up a grant in here, $10 million a year, to give those people who are legitimately doing Job Z the ability to get those tax benefits out of the program before the program is completely gone. And which, by legitimate, it means they were supposed to be creating jobs, and they were supposed to be jobs that would otherwise not have happened. These are the same problems that we have with TIF. We have all kinds of TIF around the state that, you know, has this kind of phony but-for thing out there that it's just a corporate subsidy. And I think everybody can look at the list of corporate subsidies and say, well, I like that one, though. I mean, I think we've all got that ability. But I tried to just let really Mr. Michael do the work and kind of combing through the books to do what you just said. Do the whole herd. Don't pick and choose. Take them all out. There's actually a lot more corporate subsidies out there in Minnesota, but they're in the local government property tax bucket that we can't get money out of them. So, you know, that part is missed, but I appreciate that there's a political component to that piece, but I would hope the committee would recognize it's a small piece, and the bill is still heavily, the corporate subsidies are mostly lost in the metro, not in rural Minnesota, and in general, you know, we try to be balanced in the bill, and in this case, it's actually not balanced. It's actually, the majority of the money is coming out of the metro, so I wanted to be clear on that. I do want to, before we go to Representative Simpson, say that the ninth grade students of St. Louis Park High School are with us. Welcome. Thank you for being here. So we're glad you're here. Representative Simpson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. You have a difficult job to try and find revenue, and there's no question about that.
and to be pure is a wonderful thing. But I guess the thing that that I see in this whole bill is, how is this going to set us apart from other states, and how is this going to set our business community back as we try to move forward? You know, I go through this, the Job Z thing. I mean, I'm not going to beat on that horse. I think everybody knows where I stand. I will question the legislative auditor a little bit from the standpoint of, I don't think there's any discussion about what does it do when you create 25 jobs in a community, or 50 jobs, or 100 jobs. What does it do to the school district? What does it do to the local housing market? What does it do to keep the little grocery store open on the corner? Those are all unmeasurables, and they're not in the legislative auditor's report. I don't think he went after any of that stuff. So we see that as a benefit, and we've seen some of the benefits of that. So I think that Job Z has a lot more merit than given credit for, and we'll continue down that path as we move forward. But I'm concerned about some of the other things in the bill, the R&D credits. How is that going to make us compete? Every now and then I happen to hit the car about 4 o'clock, 4:30 on an afternoon. I'm heading out of town, and I hear our folks from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, advertising, well, Minnesota's back in session, folks. Pay attention. So what's going to happen when we do some of these things, and how are our corporates going to compete with that attitude and the things that are happening down there? One of the things we've talked a lot about here in this committee is the biotech zones and the medical zones. And those aren't in rural Minnesota. Those are for, most of those are down here in the Seven County metro area. They're in the Rochester area and stuff. And if we don't have those zones and we don't continue to promote that type of activity, every one of those jobs are high-paying jobs. They're technical, and I see a challenge with not being able to do that. The bovine testing, that sounds like a silly little thing, but I think we better find $700,000 somewhere to put in the ag department to pick that up. Right now in the state of Minnesota, we've got a real disaster going in northwestern Minnesota. We're not able to sell cattle out of this state without this testing to go forward. So this is a real issue. I think right now they're declaring a emergency up there, and they're opening deer season to try and eliminate the deer herd in about three or four counties up there. So there's another effect of what's happening out there. So I think as these things are played forward, we have to look at each one of these and make sure that we're not really hurting our state on long-term effects. And I know where you're trying to go, and I appreciate that. Reducing the tax rate, well, that's probably the best thing I've seen in the whole bill, because our corporate tax rate is high to begin with. So I think that's a good thing. Maybe, who knows, maybe we'll be able to take one of these airline companies that's looking at buying Northwest out and get them to bring their corporate offices here, if we have a tax rate that's comparable to other states that are looking at taking that corporate office too. So as we move forward, I think those are the challenges of this committee, is to try to do things that possibly raise revenue, but also possibly keep us competitive to other communities, other states, and keep us alive and well in our business community, because we cannot survive as taxpayers without the business community. They're the revenue raisers, they're the ones that make things move forward, and we have to have them. So, thank you.
Thank you for that. And I, Mr. Michael, would you just on something Representative Simpson said, and I agree, I mean, it's these are all going to be rough choices. I think the alternative of the core government services in the other committees, the higher ed committee, the health care committee, the CAFA, are much worse than repealing corporate subsidies. That's just my personal opinion. But Representative Simpson raised the R&D credit, and I talked to Mr. Michael about that a little bit, and I maybe Mr. Michael can tell us where we are in Minnesota. My understanding is in Minnesota, our R&D credit is so low it's almost not an incentive to do anything, that other states are providing much more generous R&D credits. Mr. Michael, can you comment about Minnesota's R&D credits?
Madam Chair, Minnesota's R&D credit is a 5% credit on, I think, the first $2 million of research expenditures, and that's largely payroll payments, and then 2.5% on the amount over that. Minnesota was, in fact, if I recall correctly, the first state to actually enact an R&D credit shortly after the federal credit was enacted. Since then, most states, I think probably more than half of the states with corporate taxes have R&D credits. and many of them, I don't have my R&D file here, but many of them are higher, and in some cases substantially higher than Minnesota's. You know, it's hard to know. There have been some empirical studies that show that R&D credits do have a statistically significant effect on the amount of R&D in the state. Our credit probably is not high enough to compete in that, but I don't recall, you know, whether those studies analyze Minnesota's effect or not. But Minnesota's credit is definitely way on the lower end of the scale.
Thank you. Representative Coonan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have to admit this is an interesting idea, although, as you can hear, it starts to get picked apart right away. And to be honest with you, Madam Chair, there's something I need to pick on a little bit here, too, and that's the bovine TB testing. It's a small item on here, it's $700,000, and the truth of the matter is once the TB problem is addressed, there's no need for it anymore, so it's not ongoing. And also, it's one of those that it's pretty much targeted to family farmers and ranchers. I don't have a question for Mr. Micro, Mr. Wilson at this time, but at some point I would like Assistant Commissioner of Agriculture, Joel Martin, to explain to the committee a little bit on the impact of this credit.
Thank you for that, Representative Coonan, and we will get into that. I think Representative Simpson is carrying the governor's bill. I think Representative Cole Zellers and a few others here are co-authors of that bill. And actually, I think the governor not only keeps the credit in place, but he provides significant more financial help to the bovine situation, as I recall. So I knew that would be a point of contention, but it's on the list because it is a corporate subsidy, and I just wanted to put it on there. But I know that discussion will be ongoing. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Michael, I think, is best asked this question too. Does this complete the wipeout of the corporate subsidies, or are there subsidies still in place? I'm just trying to get a sense of if we're picking and choosing, or if this is all of the corporate or other business subsidies in the state of Minnesota are compiled within this bill.
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Broad, I don't want to ever say that this is a complete list. It includes almost all of, and I can't off the top of my head think of any others. It includes the Minnesota specific ones that are in Minnesota law that deviate from federal law. This does not go after provisions that sort of from federal law flow through to state law because of the sort of the conformity complexity issue. So there's, if you look, for example, in the tax expenditure budget, there's a long list of items that benefit businesses but are a result of our using federal taxable income as a starting point. There may be some other Minnesota ones that I'm not thinking of. There were some that were not included for sort of policy reasons. For example, one that the chair asked me about was Minnesota insurance companies are not subject to the corporate franchise tax, and that was a change that was made recently, like in 2001, but it is the norm in most other states, and of course insurance companies instead pay the premium tax, which is sort of like a sales tax on insurance companies. And so the chair made a decision that, yeah, those businesses are paying an alternative tax, and so therefore we're not going to repeal that, even though if you look in the tax expenditure budget, it says, wow, that's $70 million. So there are a few items like that, but by and large, it's pretty much inclusive.
Madam Chair, a couple of follow-up questions. Mr. Wilson, I think, is best to ask this question, but if not, just throw it to Mr. Michael. I'm not sure. We're talking about this in the frame of revenue gain or in the frame of corporate subsidies and all sorts of other sterilized words. But we often talk about the things that we do here in relation to the number of jobs. And so I'm just wondering, if you have a $280 million tax increase, which is contained in this bill, How does that relate to the number of jobs in the state of Minnesota that would be either lost or harmed by going in this direction?
Dr. Wilson.
Madam Chair, Representative, I really can't answer the jobs question. I would say that it's complicated because if you have to find money somewhere, wherever you make a budget cut, that affects jobs. If you raise revenue somewhere else, it may affect jobs. So I don't know that I can really help you much with that question. I would say that it's probably not best to think about corporate tax as a loan. I mean, I think that the one message here that is probably useful would be think about business taxes more generally. If you want to think about the impact of something on jobs of a tax change, think about all business taxes. There is a study by Ernst & Young that has been given fairly high regarded that tries to estimate in each state what the taxes are, the business taxes are in each state. And, of course, the biggest pieces of them are property taxes and the sales tax on inputs are much bigger than the corporate tax. In Minnesota, they sort of swamp the corporate tax. I do think in terms of tax policy, you ought to think about what you're doing to business taxes more generally. So this is roughly a 15% change in corporate tax revenue. So it's like net an increase in corporate taxes, but it's not an increase of that size in business taxes. And that doesn't really address your question so much, but business and jobs are affected by the other parts of it as well, I guess is the point. So this bill is focused only on one narrow piece of the business tax pot.
Well, and Representative Broad, and I believe you have more on that. I do want to just jump in and say that because it's my bill, so I probably should be sitting over there, but since it is my bill, I'll just say that, you know, I think we all can figure out how the language around this bill will be, you know, a $280 million tax increase, I just heard you say. I mean, these are tax preference cuts, in my estimation. They are corporate subsidies. We have to make choices. And remember, there's a full percentage tax rate cut to all corporations, and we abolished the AMT, which is another corporate tax cut. So I guess, you know, we're all masters at calling this whatever we want. But what I do want to tell you is I'm trying really hard to not, when you mentioned the term sterile language, I really am trying very hard to not do inflammatory language in this bill and stick on the tax policy. I mean, this bill is, in my estimation, excellent tax policy. It really is taking the winners out of the system and providing relief to the losers. But the sterile language comment, I have to tell you, most folks on my side of the aisle would call this corporate welfare, and I never use that language. I do not think that these corporate subsidies are corporate welfare. Most folks on my side of the aisle would call them that. What I think they are is choices that previous legislatures made over time to do different activities in the business economy, and I think that some of them aren't a bad idea. What I'm trying to do here is say with a $1 billion deficit, someone has to start the cutting. And I think the governor's made it clear that he's not going to look too kindly on a lot of new revenue raisers. And there's a tax cut, a few of them in here, and I don't have any general tax increases. So I'm trying to get away. We'll let all the other committees on the floor do all the inflammatory stuff, but I really am trying to do some good business taxation policy here. And it may not appear that way to folks, and I understand that depending where you sit, it's not always perceived that way. But I wanted to throw that in. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate that. But I do think that as we sit and discuss tax policy, we have to realize, and I know you do, I realize that it impacts families and it impacts jobs and it impacts our communities. And so when we're thinking about all these corporate, we use the word corporate, and by the way, there's all sorts of small businesses that are corporations, so we're not just talking about big conglomerations that a lot of people think that we're talking about. We're talking about small businesses and Main Street throughout the state. So I just wanted to make sure that we're talking about the same things. We're talking about jobs. We're talking about a good tax policy. Madam Chair, and we're also talking about competitiveness, and I think that's something that I will be looking at further. I mean, I just happen to, and probably because I'm a little bit of a geek, but I mean, I just happen to have a U.S. manufacturing report in terms of competitiveness, and we are not competitive on a worldwide scale. In terms of our cost of doing business, we're not competitive because of cost for all sorts of reasons, regulatory, the cost of just purely the cost of doing business. And I just don't want to go further in that direction in terms of our own worldwide competitiveness. And again, it's not just the big businesses. We're also talking about small businesses in your towns and in my towns. And I just wanted to make sure that that is kept on the radar screen as we discuss this. And I will try to keep the rhetoric down. I know I have some, and I know we all do. But I did want to put the issue of jobs on the table.
Thank you for that, Representative Broad. Representative Demmer. And then Lanning. Oh, to that point?
No.
Oh, Representative Wolschager, to that point, then we're going to go to Representative Demmer.
Chair members, Representative Broad. You know, on that point, Ireland is leading for tax or the lack of tax and lack of regulation. So, you know, I personally don't want to go there with Ireland. So,
yeah. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I don't know too much about Ireland. We just got done with St. Paddy's Day, so I think there's a lot of Irish and a lot of us in those days. But I think I want to make sure that we are focused on the fact that this is a tax increase. We are raising taxes. Here's what we're doing. We're raising taxes on job providers. And we aren't on an island in Minnesota. We aren't on an island. I don't think that we have a great quality of life. We have a great place to be. But businesses are mobile, and they come and they go. And most of the things that we're dealing with in this zone, I do appreciate where you're going with this, and I've had these kind of thoughts myself. Maybe we should just lower things and make it good for everybody. But there are some things we have to be very cognizant of as we work on this. Most of the things that are in this bill that we're undoing are with the purpose of creating jobs. And so if they were created with the idea that they're going to be job creators by bringing businesses here, by undoing them, will the opposite happen? Because they are mobile and they can leave. I think another thing comes into play here, and that's Minnesota's reputation as a partner. You know, a lot of these deals are put together by businesses. They came here with the understanding that they had an agreement, if you will, that would provide them benefit over time, and that's why they came. And in the future, I assume people will make similar decisions when they try to locate their businesses or decide about expanding their businesses. And if we make these changes midstream or in the process of people carrying out what they thought was their agreement, what's it going to say for future deals to come along? And are we going to be somebody that can be counted on as a state? And I'm sure I think we have to take that in consideration. In my businesses, when I made promises to people, I tried to exceed those promises as opposed to make changes that were detrimental. And the last thing, I know you made reference to we're affecting the whole herd in reference to the businesses and that sort of thing. And, you know, I'm engaged with agricultural background. And from where I come from, Madam Chair, when it gets to the point you're still selling the herd to pay your expenses, that's the beginning of the end. And usually it is the end when the herd gets sold because you don't sell off what's producing your revenues to pay your expenses. So I realize we're in a deficit. I realize we have to look at those things. I'm not sure that starting to sell off the herd is an appropriate thing for us to do because at some point in time we'll have to build the herd back up again. And then what's that going to take, Madam Chair? So those would be my thoughts. I do appreciate your approach, and I just think we have to make sure we keep those kind of things in perspective.
Thank you for that, Representative Demmer. And I should say that it was Representative Zeller who came up with the herd analogy, and I kind of piggybacked on it, and we're from the suburbs, so we probably shouldn't even be talking about it, so I appreciate that. And you know, there is, again, remember, there's a significant tax cut to Minnesota corporations here, and most of these corporate subsidies in the bill actually were not brought about to create jobs. Job Z was, but most of the money in here, that's really not what FOCs were ever about. It was competitiveness and foreign taxation. And if you look back at what Governor Perpich was doing back then, and most of the provisions, I mean, I don't think the reason the airport didn't have to pay taxes was about jobs. I mean, there's a lot of things going on here that had a different history. It was probably more about getting them to not leave, things like that. So, I'm not sure who was doing what when, but I do think, honestly, if the legislature can't do something like this, it's going to be a pretty tough session because the alternative choices are going to be, in my estimation, significantly harder. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for Dr. Wilson. Dr. Wilson, if we were to repeal Job Z going forward as opposed to starting to roll it back immediately, what effect would that have on the numbers that are in your report?
Pat Wilson.
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, we do have estimates of what the impact would be if we set up. I don't know, but you get very little dollars early. It you know, it grows through time, but I can get you estimates of what that would be. The dollars here, I mean, I think you basically have almost nothing in 2010, a little bit in 2011, and then it grows larger. But you've got to have entrants who are joining jobs who don't join, and that grows through time.
What's the money?
But you wouldn't get this kind of money, sir.
Well, Madam Chair, that's my point. It seems to me that what we likely are going to save by rolling back in the short term, rolling back those of people who entered into good faith business expansions, expecting those supports and incentives to be there. That's one thing, but if we were to approach it going forward instead, there still would be savings. And the savings that we're going to derive from this changing the rules in the middle of the game, I think are very minor in comparison to the potential savings long term.
Thank you. Representative Yarrow, or Rep. Brook, have you missed that point?
Well, yeah, Madam Chair, kind of to that point, you know, Representative Lanning, I think the governor is proposing to take $180 million out of the Health and Human Service budget, and a lot of it deals with, you know, those centers that take care of some very vulnerable people in our society, and their businesses, too. And we promised them last year cost of living adjustment for those people that work in those facilities. And I know I'm visiting my mother constantly in the nursing home, you know, the angels, saints that work there and don't get a very big wage for it. So we're breaking promises, and the same with the higher education budget. I mean, we tried to put money back in the higher education system last year to get us to a point where I think we're still under what these facilities actually got in 2003. And there again, you know, there's promises that have been broken. Madam Chair, you've got a difficult task here. And we've got a governor that has made some promises that I don't think were in the best interest of the state, because he's got some political aspirations, and specifically the no new tax pledge. Now, I'm glad to see it's come along a little bit with the foreign operating corporations, which we've been trying to do for a number of years. But, you know, it's just the whole thing harkens back to a tax bill from a few years ago that we never paid for. And I'm not the only one that's saying that. I constantly bring up what former Governor Carlson said, Maureen, and that is that tax bill has never been paid for. And I don't know, this roller coaster ride that we're on, I think we've had six deficits, maybe it's only five in the last 8 years, but I don't think that roller coaster ever stops until we fix the problem. And somebody somewhere has to take the bull by the horns. I can say that because I'm from rural Minnesota. But, you know, I would say it a little differently on the range, but anyway, somebody's got to do it. And Madam Chair, I'm glad to see you begin to start on this. I agree with you, Representative Lanning, on the job Z program, that perhaps we should start prospectively. But, you know, on the rest of the stuff in the bill, I don't know that our tax incentives and our tax policy has harmed the businesses that do business in this state, because I don't think there's any proof, and maybe you can prove me wrong, that our tax policy has harmed the jobs creation in this state. In fact, as we've gotten more, supposedly, less onerous on taxes, we seem to lose more jobs in this state over the last few years. So, you know, I don't envy the job that you have, Madam Chair, but you've certainly thrown a proposal out here that raises a few eyebrows, and I'm glad to see some of the things. And if you need inflammatory language later on, you know, I'm more than willing to refer to it as corporate welfare, because that's what it is, actually, than the corporate subsidies. But, Representative
we can have that discussion later on.
So we'll get Representative Broad and Representative Brukovina to get into that for us later.
Madam Chair,
Representative Lanning, yes.
If I might respond to this point, Representative Brukovina, you may be surprised to hear that I differ with the governor on his proposal to roll back cost of living increases for a nursing home or people working with people with disabilities. We should not do that. We should keep our commitment. And I believe that the state of Minnesota, when we make a commitment to people in good faith, that we ought to keep that commitment. And if we have to change the rules going forward, so be it. We have the same principle operating with the life estate issue. What I worked for 2 years to get the life estate provision changed, so we didn't change the rules in the middle of the game, and finally we were able to get that done. So we're together on that general point, Representative Rukavina.
Thank you. And we've got Representative Rukavina.
Just to respond, Maury, I always detected there was a little heart in that test here. I know that you're sincere about what you're saying, but we still... you're the leader of your party in this state has proposed some, what I think is terrible cuts on people that really can't defend themselves. The people that you're proposing to cut, I'm sure, certainly have the wherewithal around this capital to defend their policies, and they'll be doing it, I'm sure. Uh-huh. They're scurrying around already as we speak.
Okay, so we have Representative Yarros, Dabney, Liebling, Paulson, then we're going to adjourn, and we're going to move, we're going to take it back up and do public testimony on it another day, because my understanding is both caucuses have caucus. So, Representative Yarros.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members, Representative Simpson brought up South Dakota, and a couple of people here mentioned that Minnesota is an island, and it is. It reminds me of a Midwestern legislative conference in Des Moines, Iowa, in mid-90s. I was a member of the Agriculture, Economic Development, and International Trade Committee. And for one session, we had three foreign corporation representatives talking about what makes them come to United States or some other country, or what national U.S. national companies are doing. What there was a guy from South, senator from South Dakota, and he said one of the guys from Germany was talking about what it takes what businesses look at to locate, and taxes are like number four or five. They look at education, workforce training, location, transportation, and so on. And he said, and the South Dakota senator said, well, why don't you come to South Dakota? We don't have income tax. I believe he said that we don't have corporate taxes. And this German guy said, and you don't have a single national or international corporation in your state. Minnesota has more national and international corporations headquartered here than any state at least that was in 95 or something, than any state in the United States. And it was doing better economically than any state in the Midwest. So we are an island. We did well. I don't know what the latest statistics are, but we did well in 1995. I think we're still up there, except maybe the Republican administration ruined it in the last 6 or 8 years.
Thank you, Representative.
Corporate tax was set, I believe, during the Minnesota miracle. It was more than 10%, and it was in the perfect administration, DFL control, that we brought it to 9.8. I don't think you should go below that.
Thank you. Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, thank you. Your prohibition on inflammatory language cuts about half of my comments, so that the audience can...
I'm
going to try, Representative Rukavina. I may not be able to do it, but I'm going to try. First of all, I really do appreciate the bill. It took courage on your part to bring this forward. I think it's the right conversation to have. I think you saw me in the conference committee last year. I think I'm a skeptic at best on a lot of these corporate subsidies, and was fairly vocal about that in the conference committee last year. And at the same time, I'm going to run the risk of agreeing with some of my colleague, appropriately to my right, Representative Simpson's comments about the R&D credit. I think there's a difference between subsidizing the Mall of America to create retail wage jobs without benefits, and a smart strategic investment such as the R&D credit that creates high-paying jobs with good benefits and positive spin-offs for the state. And I think we can have, I think I would welcome a conversation that looks at these different subsidies through a strategic lens. What is it that, what is our return on investment? What is it that moves us forward? 32 other states are enhancing their R&D credit. The average R&D job pays $70,000, I think it is, a year, plus the spinoff. There's some opportunities there that we've been losing as a state because of our relatively anemic R&D credit compared to our competing states, that I think at least maintaining, if not enhancing, could actually benefit the state in the long term, while still not doing some of the subsidies that you targeted here today that don't provide the sort of return on investment for the state.
Thank you for that. And I think Representative Paulson has some agreement with you on the R&D credit. As we all recall, his amendment on the floor, and we might be getting to that in just a second. So Representative Liebling and then Paulson, and then we'll adjourn.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be brief since I know we're running out of time. First of all, I just wanted to say, obviously, difficult times call for some bold new ideas. And this is certainly a bold idea, and I really commend you, and I think this is about as much fun as I've had in taxes in a long time. So thank you for that. And I'm sure we'll continue to discuss a lot of these specific proposals, obviously. I really had some questions, and maybe I'll just lay them out, and then maybe, I don't know if they were for Dr. Wilson or for Mr. Michael, but maybe, I think we'll all probably want to know some more about this, so I'll just lay them out, and then I'll quit. One is whether this simplifies our tax system for companies in any way that might create actually some savings for them. I know sometimes some bills that come before us, I think maybe these bills are full employment for lawyers, you know. This one, it strikes me, maybe some lawyers might be unemployed if some of this went into effect. I'd kind of like to know whether that is in fact true. Secondly, we talk about volatility a lot, and as I remember, I think the corporate tax is one that's pretty volatile. So I guess I'd like to know whether this might make our system more or less volatile. And the third thing is, I guess I'd like more comparison to other states. There's been some talk about that today. And, you know, I don't recall, you know, where we fall. Where would we fall with an 8.8%? And what about the simplification of the structure? You know, how would that really make us look in comparison to other states? So with that, Madam Chair, I will quit.
Thank you for that. And Mr. Michael and then whoever will be appropriate at the next time we come back to this bill and do public testimony, I think those are great questions. The simplicity, the volatility, and comparing the competitiveness. So we should get answers to that at our next meeting. I still want to get to Representative Paulson before we adjourn. Representative Paulson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with many of the comments that Representative Dabney was making, and I wish it was a perfect world and every state were the same, but it's not, when even North Dakota has an 8%. Credit, I think, for R&D in California certainly is higher, I think, at 24 or something, and so there certainly is some benefit. We are anemic, so I don't want to say it's to the point of getting rid of our anemic R&D credits. I'd rather go in the other direction. But I think the Representative Broad brought up the point too about another corporate subsidy that's out there, and I believe we have the employer transit pass credit. I'm not advocating that be included, but it is another credit that's out there that I think it's equal to like 30% of the expense that's incurred by a corporation that provides transit passes to its employees. And it's something else that would be considered, I think, in the same category, Madam Chair.
Representative Paulson, you're absolutely right, and we can get an amendment ready for that.
For consistency, Madam Chair,
I completely agree with you. You're absolutely right. We'll continue this discussion. This is a good discussion. We want to hear from the public and all the folks from the herd when we bring it back. Thank you. We are adjourned.